And we're holding in Yerushalmi Shkolim, page Tes Ois Chafalef. We started learning yesterday about things having to do with tzedakah, because the Mishnah mentioned that you had the Lishkas Hashoyim, the chamber of the quiet, hidden ones in the Beis Hamikdash, where people could give tzedakah anonymously and people could receive tzedakah anonymously, which, as the Rambam says, is the next to highest level of tzedakah. Anyway, so continuing with topics of tzedakah, the Gemara says, Nochum ish gamzu hoyim molech dorin lebeis chomim. Nochum ish gamzu was one time bringing some presents to his father-in-law's house. This story is also in the Bavli and Tainus with some variations. Anyway, pogah bechad mukashchin, on the way, he met up with a fellow who was covered with boils. Omalei, and the guy says, Zechei imi mimadi iskabach. Get a schos through me from some of what you have with you. You have all kinds of food with you, so get a schos of tzedakah by giving me some of it. Loi choshbe and Nochomish Gamzu didn't consider it to be urgent enough, because the way the guy phrased it, Zecheimi, didn't sound like it was so urgent, like he's on the verge of dying. And after all, he has to get quickly to his father-in-law's house. There's an Indian to have covered for his father-in-law as well. Kabit Esavichav Esimecho also includes your in-laws, so he didn't think it was that urgent. In the printed Yerushalmi, instead the Gir says, instead of here, Loi choshbe, the printed Yerushalmi instead has the Girsa, he says, Michzur, when I come back. And the Bavli has it similarly in time. So he figured there's time enough. There's time enough. Well, Kichozer, by the time Nochum came back, Ashtay the Mist, he found that the guy had died. Come le Kivle v'Omar. So Nochum stood in front of him and he said, Eina d'le chomun loch, the eyes, my eyes that didn't see you. Fine, you spoke in a way that I was able to rationalize to myself that it's not so urgent, but I should have looked with my eyes and seen how bad off you are and realized that it is urgent. So those eyes that didn't have the sensitivity to realize that, says Nochum, yistamu, deserve to go blind. Yadayah d'le poshtan l'mitan loch, the hands that didn't stretch out to give you tzedakah, yiskatun, should be cut off, should be amputated. Raglayah d'le ratan l'mitan, the feet that did, my feet that didn't run to give you, yitabrun, should be broken. And the Bavli, when it tells the story, also Nochum tells over. So later on, in fact, all these things happen, and he's lying there in a bed, and his The Bavli gives much more detail about it, but anyway, he mentions over there when his Talmidim asked him, how did you come to be in such a terrible situation? So he tells him this story, and he says, I still wasn't appeased. I still felt there was something more that I have to say. And then I finally said, my whole body should be covered with boils. And that's all those things that he's describing over here happen. Matas Lekain, so sure enough, all those things happen. Solik Rabbi Akiva Levar Kora Yosei, so Rabbi Akiva, his Talmud, came to visit him. Omalei, and Rabbi Akiva says, Oili shani roya oischa b'kach, woe to me that I have to see you, my Rebbe, in such a horrible situation, hands and feet amputated and blind and covered with boils. Omalei, so Nochum answers back, Oili she'enani roya oischa b'kach. On the contrary, I would be very, very miserable and very bad off if I don't see you, Rabbi Akiva, in such a state yourself. Omalei, so Rabbi Akiva says, Amat Makalaleni, are you cursing me that I should have all these things happen to me? Omalei, so Nochum answers back, Umat Mivayat be Yisurim, are you rebelling against the concept of Yisurim? You should realize that Yisurim are a very powerful thing to clean up a person's Avedas, and you should welcome them like I am with mine. Rabbi Akiva, of course, had his own set of Yisurim at the end of his life, but the Ein Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Chaver, points out that really the story as a whole is in the Gemara, in the Bavli and Tainus. There was really no reason for him to bring it again over here, except to highlight that answer that Nochum gave, that you should realize how powerful and how good Yisurim are for a person, and therefore don't say I don't want it to happen. Adrabe, at least somebody on Rabbi Akiva's level should realize the value and the greatness of them. So the Gemara continues with another story illustrating. Now, we learned yesterday that part of giving tzedakah is also to make sure to preserve the poor person's dignity as much as possible. So here's a story that illustrates that idea of treating, of doing to a person in a way that will preserve his dignity. There's a similar, the punchline of the story is also in the Bavli and Chagiga, and so it was not long ago in Ein Yaakov as well. Rabbi Hoshia Rabba, this is the famous Rabbi Hoshia who he and Rabbi Hoshia, he's often called as well, he and Rabbi Chia together composed the Tosefta. Anyway, have a rabbi debre chad sagya nahoda. His rebbe, his son's melamed was blind. They have a yalif, have ocho kamohi, and this melamed was accustomed to that he would eat by Rab Hoshi. Rab Hoshi would invite the melamed to eat with him. Adzman, now there came a point, this blind Malamud would be invited for a particular time every day that Rav Hoshea would have a fixed time for his meal, and he would invite this Malamud to join him. One day Rav Hoshea had guests, so he didn't go. Now, like this, how is the blind Malamud supposed to get to Rav Hoshea for the meal? So Rav Hoshea himself would go, or he would send somebody to pick up the Malamud and bring him to his house. On this day, Rav Hoshea had guests, so he didn't have a chance, so he didn't go to the Malamud. The Ram Shasolik Lagabe, that evening he went to visit the Malamud. Omale, he says, Al Yichos Mori Olai, my master, you the Malamed, should not be angry at me. Begin to have a lay orchin. I had guests at my house. I didn't want that you, my Rebbe, should be embarrassed on this day. I don't want you to feel. The point is, in other words, my guests, they wouldn't understand how special you are, and they would think, some random blind person. They wouldn't treat you with the proper respect. Yomadein on this day begin to like achosim mori yomadein, and that's why, because of that, is why I didn't eat with you, my rebbe, on this day. So even though Rav Hoshea himself is an enormous talmid chacham, this melamed, we don't know what caliber he was, not necessarily of the caliber of Rav Hoshea, but out of respect, Rav Hoshea is calling him over and over, mori, my master, and explaining the reason I didn't invite you is because I didn't want that those other guests should look down on you. So Omalei, so the Malamed says, accepted the Rav Hoshea was saying to make him feel better. Omalei says, At Isis deigned mischami v'leichomi. You've appeased, you've said something nice to make me feel better. Someone who can be seen, but who can't see. You can see me because you're sighted, but I can't see you because I'm blind. In return, Dechomi v'le mischami, Hashem, who sees but cannot be seen, Yekabel piyusach, may Hashem accept your piyus, may Hashem accept your good words and count it as a schus for you. So that punchline we have in the Bavli and Chagiga as well, in a different story involving Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Anyway, Omalei Hodom Noloch, so Rav Hoshea asks the Malamed, where'd you get the idea for such a bracha from? Omalei Mirab Elezer ben Yaakov. I got it from Elezer ben Yaakov. Did Rav Elezer ben Yaakov solit chad sagi nahoda lakaute? One time, a blind person visited Rav Elezer ben Yaakov's city. Yosef le Rav Elezer ben Yaakov le ramine, and Rav Elezer ben Yaakov, when they were having a meal together, Rav Elezer ben Yaakov sat in a lower down place than him. The way they had in those days, people reclined on couches during the meal, like you have a seba by Pesach, and the idea is, the Gemara, the Bavli mentions in Brachos, it's mentioned in other places, like you'd have the higher seat and then the lower ones. I don't know if it means that they were physically higher up, like on an elevated platform, or whether it just means like they were positioned in such a way, like you're going from the head of the table to the foot of the table, kind of. So here, Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov sat in less honorable position compared to this blind person. To Yemrun, because Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov wanted that people should say, Ilule to have a Barnash Rabba, if this person weren't a great person, weren't a great Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik, less Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov, Yosef Laramine, then Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov wouldn't sit further down than him in the less important place. The fact that Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov is putting him in the higher, more important position relative to him means he must be a great, distinguished Talmud Chacham. The result was, Yavin le Panasasi bikar. So the result was, they arranged for him a Parnasa in a Bekavadik way. Whether it means they gave him a lot of tzedakah, whether it means that they arranged an appropriate job for him that he would be able to easily do despite the fact that he's blind and be able to get paid, whatever the case, they did that. Omalei, so the blind person didn't know that all of this was going on. He couldn't see. Omalei, so he asks the people, Man Yosef L'Ramini, who's sitting further down the table than me? Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, Yosef Ladaminach. So they told him it's Rabbi Lezman Yaakov. Right? And now already he knew Rabbi Lezman Yaakov himself is an Adam Gadol, so he realized what Rabbi Lezman Yaakov had done for his coven. Sali Aleik, Hadot Sloisan, he davened on him, on Rabbi Lezer, exactly the same tefillah. So now the Malamed is saying, a generation or two later, he's saying the same way. I learned from him to this tefillah. Where the blind person in Rabbi Lezman Yaakov's story says, "Act gamlas chesed im demeschami v'lechami." You did a chesed with the one who is able to be seen but who can't see. Dain dechami v'lemeschami Hashem, who sees but can't be seen. Yavid im a chesed should do chesed with you. So the same way the Malamed says to Rabbi Hoshi, I'm giving you the same bracha that this blind person in a previous generation said to Rabbi Lezman Yaakov. Okay. Earlier in the Perek, it talks about, after it mentioned at the beginning of the Perek, it talked about the various memunim in the Bais HaMikdash, the various officials who are in charge of running different parts of the organizational structure of the Bais HaMikdash. So the Mishnah had mentioned that many of these things involve finances, involve money. Collecting the money for the Nesachim, for example, and then digging the ditches where people then are paying for the water, et cetera, a lot of these things involve money. And the Mishnah mentions usually you don't have less than two people in charge of financial matters, with the exception, the Mishnah says, that the Tzibur accepted there were a couple of these officials where there was one individual person, and that's because Oisim Kiblu Roiv Tzibur Aleihem, the Tzibur accepted that they could do the job by themselves. But ordinarily, whenever you have anything involving finances, you're supposed to have at least two people. And the idea was that way people won't get suspicious. When you have only one person, then people are going to start getting suspicious that maybe he took some of the money for himself or whatever. When you have two people, then they help be a check on each other. So in that connection, then the Gemara brings the following. We're going to see that Moshe became rich and where he became rich from, and we're going to see that even Moshe, people suspected him falsely of embezzling funds, of becoming rich that way. So we see from that even a Moshe Rabbeinu, generally speaking, shouldn't be in charge of matters of mammon all by himself, as we're saying, in order to avoid chashad, because we see that even Moshe Rabbeinu was subjected to such chashad. So Amar Abchama Bachanina, Mipsoilus Shaluchus Hashir Moshe. Moshe became rich from the leftovers of the Luchus. Luchus were made out of sapphire, which is a precious stone. So Hashem told him, Sol Lacha, carve for yourself out the Luchus, and he was able to keep the chips of sapphire. Shanema Psol Lacha means Shea Psoilus Shalcha, means the Psoilus, the leftovers, should be yours. So therefore he became very rich from that. And the point being, because we know that when they were getting ready to leave Mitzrayim and everybody's asking the Mitzrayim for silver and gold and clothes and whatnot, Moshe was busy finding Yosef's coffin so that they could fulfill the promise to Yosef. So he didn't have a chance to gather any wealth then. So now Hashem gave him wealth over here. Omer Rav Chanin says a different way that Moshe became rich. Hashem showed Moshe under his tent. Hashem revealed to him a mine where you could mine for precious stones and pearls, or Misham Hashem Moshe, and that's where Moshe became rich again. So again, the idea is that it'll be Lacha, so it's not only, Eitz Yosef explains, in other words, that Rav Chanan is saying, it's not only from the chips of the Luchas, but also in addition, Hashem gave him also a mine of Avonim Tovus Magolius, was there right under his tent, and then some of it is sapphire, and he could carve out the Luchas from that, and the rest, the remaining pieces of sapphire, as well as all the other gems that were there, he could keep for himself. With that said, Hakosef says that maybe you don't have to say necessarily that it actually means that Moshe had physical riches. You could say that the Gemara means to imply that the we're saying the toich aloi in the sense that Moshe sitting in his tent is sameach b'chelkoi, and he's satisfied with whatever he has, whether he's rich begashmius or not. As far as he's concerned, that's the equivalent of precious stones and pearls. And he goes and talks about that barichus. On the other hand, Yafei Mara says the fact is that we do have that again there are midrashim that make it very clear that because Moshe forewent all the riches of Mitzrayim in order to deal with Yosef's coffin, therefore Hashem was going to pay him back. So we're not just talking about ruchni yistika sameach b'chelka like Akosa is saying, but rather we're talking about actual gashmi yistika riches. Besides which, anyway, the Gemara points out in the Dorim that we learn from this that a Navi has to be rich. Among the qualities that a person has to have in order to be a Navi is they have to be rich. One idea being because people look up to a rich person. Another point being that way he's not afraid to tell the truth. He doesn't have to be afraid that people are going to harm his parnasa or whatever. Anyway, so all of that implies that we're talking about actual gashmiistic riches over here, not just Sameach b'chelkei. Anyway, so now that we've established that one way or the other, or both together, that Moshe was rich, uchtiv, now you also have a pasuk, v'hibitu achrei Moshe ad boyei ha'oyla. When Moshe would go out to his tent, and the psukim are describing how after the Chet Ha'egel, Moshe pitched his tent outside the Machna, and the Koraloi oyel moed, and anybody who wanted to learn Torah would go over there. So the pasuk says, when Moshe was going to his tent, v'hibitu achrei Moshe, that everybody would be gazing, their eyes would be following Moshe, ad boyei ha'oyla, until he came into the tent. So why are they gazing after him? So two Amiroim argue about why they were looking at him. One says they were looking at him in a praiseworthy way, the way that you would look at a tzaddik, and the other says they were looking at him in a way of gnai. They were looking at him like in a way of look at that guy. The Bavli mentions this point in Kiddushin as well. Manda Omer Lignai, the one who says that they were looking at him Lignai, he says they were saying, maybe they were thinking, whatever. Chomu shoke v'chomu kare. Take a look at his legs. Take a look at his feet. Chomu pirke. Take a look at the rest of his joints. How fat he is. How well fed he is. Ochel hum yudoi v'shostim yudoi u'madli mid yudoi. He's eating and drinking and taking himself wealth out of what belongs to us Jews. So they're accusing and suspecting Moshe falsely of embezzling money that belongs to the Jewish people and then using it for his own needs, and that's why he looks so fat. You find also in Parshas Pekudei, by the same token, when Moshe is giving the accounting of everything that went into the Mishkan, so you have over there the Medrash mentions, first he mentions as when it comes to the silver, the 100 kikar of silver that was used to make the Adonim, and then afterwards it mentions Vesa Elef, or Shvam Eos, etc., the 1775 shkolim that went into making the hooks and whatnot. The Medrash mentions that Moshe couldn't originally remember what those were for, and at least some of the no good start saying, oh, look at that, he embezzled that 1775 shkolim and kept it for himself. And the Edishta has to announce, no, Vesa Elef, Vesa Shema, also Vavim Lamudim, no, Moshe was faithful and gave every shekel to where it's supposed to be. So here you have the same kind of thing that you have some, we're not talking about the whole Jewish people, obviously, but you have some no good nicks that are suspecting him of these kinds of things. So that's it. So by them, that's what the Hibitu Achrei Moshe was. Umanda Omel Shvach, whereas the one who says that they were looking at him in a praiseworthy way, means they were saying to themselves, Mechmi Tzadikayim, Mizochi, imagine who has the schus to see such a tzaddik. We should have the printed Yerushalmi has the girsa a little differently, has kind of a longer girsa that amounts to them saying, look how fortunate we are to have seen the tzaddik, if only we should continue to have the schus to continue to see the tzaddik. So they're the ones who are vihibitu in the positive sense. Hakosa points out also over here that the pasuk of Moshe Yikach HaSa'oil is earlier than the pasuk Psal Lecha. Moshe Yikach HaSa'oil is in the middle of Perek Lamed Gimel in Shmos. Psal Lecha is Perek Lamed Dalet. But the connection is that, so on the face of it then, in other words, was it because Moshe became rich from Psal Lecha, therefore v'yibitu achrei Moshe? But Rashi on the Psukim points out that this that Moshe had his tent pitched outside the Machna was not just a one-time thing. It continued to be that way until the Mishkan was set up. And then, from then on, the Shkina moved to the Mishkan, and then Moshe moved back into the Machna. So now, in other words, so the Psal Lecha was the Psal Lecha was Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's when Moshe went up to Har Sinai to receive the second luchos. He came down on Yom Kippur with the luchos shnius. Then they started the whole process. So by that time, already Psal Lecha had happened. And now, after that, is now after Moshe came back down on the day after Yom Kippur. Then from the day after Yom Kippur onward is when he pitched his tent outside the Machna and it remained there till Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So during that time, so in other words, Ein Muktam Uchabat Torah in short, and therefore that's so even though the pasuk of the Bitu Achrei Moshe is earlier, it was actually happening later as well. And then actually, yeah, he brings up that Ramban actually on the Psukim learns differently than Rashi, that Ramban learns that right after Moshe burnt the eagle, right after on Shivos the time was Moshe came down and broke the luchos and destroyed the eagle, and right after that Ramban learns that Moshe took his tent and pitched it outside the Machna. But the point still is, even that Ramban would agree that it continued to be that way for months afterwards, meaning, in other words, after Psol Lecha. So therefore, so it works out. So he brings, by the way, also from Medrash Rabba and Parshas Psol Lecha on the relevant pasuk in Shmos, Zem Noschoi, and the Medrash adds another point as follows. You have in Kehelas, which is Hazman Groma now during Sukkos, you have many Kehelas where they have the minhag to read Kehelas publicly, and even though it's not our minhag, nevertheless there is a sheichus of Kehelas to Chag HaSukkos. Anyway, so you have in Kehelas, Shloima has a whole thing over there, the 28 itim, ace for this, ace for that, ace for this, ace for that, and he goes through 28 different contrasts in life. So he has a pasuk, Eis lahashlech avonim, the Eis knois avonim. He says there's a time to throw out stones, and there's a time to gather together stones. So the Medrash Darshan's Eis lahashlech avonim, what is the time to throw away stones, is, as the pasuk says, Vayichar ach Moshe, when Moshe saw them worshipping the eagle, he got angry, Vayashlech miyodav asaluchas, and he threw down the luchas, and as we know, Hashem praised him for that. Yisha kochecha sheshibarta, as you have the very last Rashi in Parshas, and then the very last Rashi in Chumash on Parshas Vezeis Abracha mentions that the l'chayla yoda chazaka is that Moshe broke the luchos, and Hashem told him Yisha kochecha for that. You know, the famous Sicha where the Rebbe talks about why is that the culmination of the whole Torah, because it shows that Moshe put the Jewish people even ahead of the Torah. He was willing to sacrifice the Luchos to save the Jewish, to stick up for the Jewish people. Anyway, so that's the Eis Lahashlech Avonim, the Eis Knois Avonim, and when the Pasuk continues, that there's a time to gather in stones. That's as we find Psolcha, where Hashem tells him, carve for yourself out the luchos, apsolus shocha, and again, the psolus, that the leftover stones, you're not just going to throw away, you're going to keep for yourself, Misham Hashem Moshe, and that's where Moshe became rich. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because like we learned before, Hashem said, din hushi yitom Moshe, hoisim psolus. It's only right that Moshe should get that leftovers of the sapphire for the luchos. Lama, why is that? Because Yisrael shall then ask for mitzvahs. The Jewish people who were not involved in mitzvahs when they were leaving Mitzrayim, they were involved in looking for Yosef's coffin. Okay, there was a mitzvah in and of itself to go and get the wealth of the Mitzrayim. Hashem had told them that, but nevertheless, it's a mitzvah with a certain ulterior motive in it. They want to become rich after all. Nasati lehem kol tuva eretz Mitzrayim, and yet, I gave them all the wealth of Eretz Mitzrayim. Shenem of Hashem nosan aschena on beheshiru. So Hashem made them graceful in the eyes of the Mitzrayim. And even though you would think the Mitzrayim should hate them after everything that had happened, after all the makas they had gone through because of the Jews, nevertheless, unexpectedly, they were very favorable to the Yidden, and they gave them whatever they asked for. Moshe beheshiru, so they became rich. Moshe she'osek v'atzmosef shel Yosef. So Moshe was busy gathering Yosef's bones. Yehei oni, he should remain poor. So Hashem says, no, etan lo yosef psolus sheyasher. Let me give him the leftovers of the pieces of the sapphire that's going to be used to make the luchos, and that way he'll become rich. So Eitz Yosef points out, brings from Yefei Toyar on the Yerushalmi, that on the Medrash rather, that listen, I mean, if it was a matter of schar, then he's not going to get a schar in Olam Hazeh is nothing relative to what he accomplished. It's going to be a schar in Olam Haba. But nevertheless, they were saying it's not really a matter of schar; it's only a matter of fairness that he shouldn't be deprived of what the rest of the Jewish people had. First of all, I mean, Hashem knew in advance, of course, that the luchos are going to be broken, because if you know, the Eibush's yediyah is not machriach habechira, the Eibush knows what's going to happen, but people still have bechira chofshis, so the Eibush knew in advance that the luchos are going to be broken, and besides, anyway, even if the luchos hadn't been broken, if the Jewish people hadn't made the eagle, then Hashem would have found any number of other ways to make Moshe rich. So one way or the other, he wouldn't have lost out. Going back to the matter of tzedakah now, where we said we were talking about the importance of giving tzedakah and giving it the right way and so forth. So the Gemara continues. Rab Chama, Rab Chanina, Rab Hoshea Rabba. Here we just had one piece with Rab Hoshea Rabba and the blind Melamed, and another one with Rab Chama Bar Chanina talking about Pesodos Shaluchos. Now we have the two of them together. Avam Betailin Ve'in and Knishdan Delurin. They were one time walking through or near the shoals in the city of Lud. Omelet Abhoma, the Abhoshia, Hamam Momon Shiku Abahosin Khan. So Abhoma says to Abhoshia very proudly, look how much money my ancestors put into these shawls. Aren't these shawls beautiful? Look how much my ancestors invested in these. Omelet, Abhoshia answers back, on the contrary, you should take the view how many lives your ancestors put into these buildings. Weren't there people at the time who were learning Torah and could use the money for Parnasa? What were you wasting money on shul? Not wasting, but what are you using money on shul buildings when there were people who could have been supported to be able to learn Torah with that kind of money? Unfortunately, yeah, that kind of thing has to be relearned in every generation. You go even now, you travel in various parts of the United States and Canada, you come to these little favorfina towns where you'll find a beautiful ancient, you'll find a beautiful old shul building that was built by immigrants 100 odd years ago, and now and there's no Jews there left to use it, b'chlal. Whereas if they'd put their money into Hadorim and into yeshivas, then things would look completely different. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rab Ovin made gates for the great Beis Medrash in his city. Nochas Rab Mani Lagabe. Rab Mani went to visit him, Omalei, and Rab Ovin is telling him proudly, Chomi Ma'obis. Look what I did. Look at these beautiful gates that I made for the Beis Medrash. They actually found in an excavation in Eretz Yisrael, they found a lintel, what used to be the top of a doorway, that had a name inscribed on it. If I remember correctly, they actually found one that has the name Rab Ovun inscribed on it. So it might be one of these gates from the story. Anyway, Omalei, Rab Mani was not impressed, and he answers back with a pasuk, Vayishkach Yisrael Oseisehu. The Jewish people have forgotten the one who made them, Hashem, by Yivan Hecholos, and they built palaces. Now, okay, in context, we're talking about palaces, like Poshet, you know, that the rich people are going to enjoy themselves in, but still, Ramani is saying, with you, it's the same kind of thing. Again, Miloi Hava B'nei Nosha D'Yilun Baraisa, weren't there people at the time who needed money to be able to learn Torah, that and not have to go work for Parnassa, and you could have used the money for that, rather than using it on these gates. So as much as it is important to beautify a shul and to beautify Beis Medrash, there have to be greater priorities.
According to Allah, for what is really
so that's the point. In other words, when you have it's a matter in each individual case to discuss with the Rav. There is an inyan, a Beis Medrash and a Beis Knesset, a Beis Medrash bias from a godlin by Torah, bias from a godlin by Tefillah should be beautiful. But on the other hand, it has to be done in a way that's not at the expense of that money needs to be used for other purposes that are often much more important. Shloishos the shofaris perek shishi. So the Mishnah starts off by saying, Mishnah Rishonah here, Yud Gimel Shofaris. There were 13 shofaris in the Beis Mikdash. As we learned before, shofaris is the Gemara's term for a pushka. And it was called a shofar because it was shaped like one. It was curved, and it was narrow on top and wide on bottom. So when you put in money, you can't get it out that easily. That way somebody can't go and filch coins from it. So there were 13 such shofaris in the Beis Mikdash that they used for collecting money for different purposes. You had one for the Master Shekel, you had two for the Master Shekels, actually one for this year's, and one for if a person missed giving Master Shekel a previous year, and the Mishnah goes on and lists what all the other 11 were for various purposes in the Beis Mikdash. Another 13, the Yud Gimel Shulchanis. There were 13 tables in the Beis Mikdash. And the Mishnah goes on, and further on in the Perek, to list what all those 13 tables were for. You had the Shulchan itself that the Lechem Aponim was on. You had two other tables that they would put the Lechem Aponim on before they brought it into the Heichel and after they took the old Lechem Aponim out. And then there were tables that they used for shechting and skinning the Korbanos. And tables for Kalim and whatever. The Yud Gimel Ishtachavoyas, and also there were 13 bowings that the Chachamim made, that there were 13 places when you're walking around in the Beis Mikdash, there are 13 places that you should bow Hoyu B'Mikdash, that there were in the Beis Mikdash. The Mishnah mentions two reasons why for the 13. One is that it corresponds to, according to one opinion, there were 13 gates in the Azara, so whenever you got to one of those gates, you would bow to Hashem to thank him for giving us the Beis Mikdash. According to the other opinion, it's because when the Greeks took over the Beis Mikdash in the years before Hanukkah, there was the wooden fence that separates between the rest of the Hanabayas and the Chayil, which beyond that wooden fence, Goyim and certain kinds of Tmeim are not allowed to go. They even have, it's recorded, they have signs on there in the various Goyish languages warning Goyim to not go past this point. They actually found a couple of those signs in archaeological digs 100-odd years ago. Anyway, then the idea was the Greeks, when they invaded the Beis Mikdash, they were very angry at this idea that there should be that. How dare the Jews try to keep us out of their holy place? So they made 13 breaches. They broke through the Sertag in 13 places. When the Hashmonaim recaptured the Beis Mikdash, they filled in. They fixed up the 13 breaches, but according to one opinion, that's why the Chachamim made the Takana from then on. Whenever you come to one of those places that was breached and then rebuilt, then you should bow and thank Hashem for getting rid of the Greeks. Anyway, so all of those Hoyu B'Mikdash, so there were all those 13 in the Beis Mikdash. One point is, 13 is Gematria Echad, so therefore very appropriately there were a bunch of 13s in the Beis Mikdash. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to the bowings, Rav Gamliel's family, and Rav Chanina Sgana Koyanim's family, they would bow down 14 times in the Beis Mikdash. The Heichan Hoysa Hayisera, where was the extra one? Connected Lishkas Dir Ha'etzim would be when they reached in front of the chamber where they stored the wood. You have in the Ezra's Nushim, there were the four chambers that were in the corner, and normally I could show you on the Parochas over here, because there's a diagram of it, but now we have a different Parochas for Tishrei. But anyway, we know, in the corners of the Ezra's Nushim, there were four chambers over there, and each one had a different purpose, and one of them was where they stored the wood for the Mizbeach. So now, when Ramiel's family and Ramiel's Ganakoyim's family would come in front of that chamber, they would bow down also. They had a Kabbalah in their families that's where the Oren was hidden. As the Gemara is going to discuss in detail, it's also discussed in detail in the Bavli and Masechta Yuma, there are different opinions of what happened to the Oren at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, but the most widespread opinion is that it was hidden away sometime before the Churban. Where was it hidden? Someplace under the Beis Mikdash, but according to the Kabbalah that they had from their ancestors, it's under the Lishkas Dira Eitzim. Now you really actually have three different opinions on the subject. As the Gemara is going to mention, you have one opinion that it was actually captured and taken to Babel. You have another one that it was hidden under the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and you have this one that the Mishnah is mentioning over here, that Ram Gamliel and Ram Chanina Skana Koyanim had a Kabbalah in their families that it was hidden under the Lishkas Dira'it. There's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about the Rambam and Hilchos Beis HaBechira mentions the point that there are tunnels under deep winding tunnels under the Beis Mikdash, and the Oren was hidden over there, and because Shlomo knew in advance, and there's a sikha where the Rebbe works out the point that the Rambam wants us to realize the second Beis Mikdash, even though it didn't have the Oren located in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it still had the full Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash, because there's two valid places al pi halacha for the Oren, one in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and one underneath it, and now in the second Beis Mikdash it was in the one underneath. So according to that opinion, if the Rambam brings the halacha in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, that it's actually under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You could say, I guess, that it's a long tunnel that starts under the Dira Eitzim and goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, whatever, anyway. And the Mishnah continues, "Umaisa b'koyin echad shoy misasik." One time there was a koyin who was busy. Now, misasik means that can suggest that he was actually busy with his work. It could also suggest that he's playing around. The Bavli, when it tells the story, you have the expression misafik the kadruim. He was like playing around with his axe. The Rishalmi over here seems to take it that he was actually doing serious work. What it was is that the wood for the mizbeah had to be, just like korbanos have to not have a mum, in wood, a mum would be if it has worms in it. So you had kohenim who had the job of making sure that the wood has no worms in it, and the kohenim who would do that job were the bali mumim, since they can't do the avodah. So this kohen was one of these bali mumim, and he's busy over there in the lishkas dira etzim, using his axe to split open the wood and check for worms. He saw that one tile on the floor was different than the other ones. Some of the Foshim learn it means that it was a little higher than the other ones, so he realized that at one point it had been picked up and then replaced. Which, by the way, there are Midrashim that explain that when Nebuchadnezzar and his army destroyed the first Beis Mikdash, they destroyed the ceilings and the walls, but not the floors, or at least not all of the floors. So therefore, there was still floor there in the second Beis Mikdash that was left over from the first. Whereas after the second Beis Mikdash was destroyed, we know one of the five things happened on Tisha B'Av is that Turnus Rufus plowed up the whole area, which is why it's very difficult nowadays to find any traces of the Beis Mikdash inside the Harabais. Anyway, so that's one opinion, is he saw that it was Meshunah in the sense that it was a little higher than the other ones. Other Mephoshim learned that it was a different color. So he realized, therefore, that means it's like, you have like the Oren is almost like giving out a fire underground, and therefore it's discoloring the tile. Anyway, he came to tell his friends about it. Before he even had a chance to finish telling them about it, his neshama left him. So then they knew with a certainty that the Oren is hidden over there, and that's why the Eibush didn't want him to reveal the secret. The word yichud over here, by the way, it's brought as a letter or a sicha from the Friedrich Rebbe that explains that the word yichidus has three meanings, and one of them is it's in Hayom Yom, actually, that one of the meanings of Yichidus is clear, and you see that from our mission over here, that because Yichidus clarifies what your path and avodah should be, and the same way over here, the new clearly that's where the Oren is. So the Gemara will take up the various opinions about what happened to the Oren. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Ches Tishrei. As far as La'asid Lava, you have the piskum from Hayom Yom. It says that in the future, Evan Mikir Tizak, a stone will cry out from the wall, the Chofis Me'etz Yamena, and a block of wood will answer back to it. Right nowadays, the Doimim is silent. That's what Doimim means. You step on it and it's quiet. But there's going to come a time when you're going to have the Giluyim of La'asid Lava, when the Doimim is going to start talking and demanding and saying, if you didn't think or talk in Divrei Torah when you were, then how could you be walking on me? That particular piece of land, you're stepping on, might be waiting thousands of years, ever since Shreshas Mebereshis even. And any number of creatures of all kinds are stepping over there, and it's waiting that a Yid should step over there, or two Jews, and they were talking in Divrei Torah. And if not, then the ground says to him, you're also like a behemoth. Within halachas of Aseres Yemei Teshuva and Yom Kippur and all that, there's a lot to talk about. So one thing is, we know that you have to ask mechila in Yom Kippur mechaper ad shiratzes chaveroi. So a person needs to consider, for example, does he have money that he owes somebody that shaloi kadin? Then he has to go and be mefayas him. If he's not sure, then tell him at least, we're going to have a din Torah after Yom Kippur and accept that you're going to actually do what the Beis Din say. If it's only a matter of words, then you also have to be mefayas him. If it's hard, or you realize that it might be better through an intermediary, then you do it through an intermediary. And the other person should not be an achzori. He should forgive, because that's the way of a yid.